But it was a little over 2 years ago that Trish and I started to become seriously concerned about the sacred calendar and about whether or not we'd been keeping the right holy days for the past 35 years or so. And it was just 1 year ago that I gave part one of a six-part calendar series of sermons and Bible studies. I gave the last one of that series, that six-part series, on June 7th last year, when we finished the series with a study of the scriptural meanings of the oracles of God. Back then I didn't think that we were going to need a part seven, but there was a couple of things that changed my mind. After some recent conversations with various brethren at the Feast of Tabernacles and since then, and from recent studies of our own and recent questions that have come up, and because more and more brethren are bringing, or rather are beginning to question, the Hebrew calendar and the Churches of God adoption of the Hebrew calendar, and also, again, with it being 2015, there's a somewhat unique relative timing of the sun and the moon phases for the spring of this year, and how they affect the timing of God's holy days this year. So because of all of these things, I came to think that a seventh part of this series might be a good idea, even though there'll probably be quite a bit of repetition from the other six parts, and I apologize for that, but I think it's necessary for the, say, the people who are just coming into the knowledge of this. So in the sermon time today, what I'd like to do is I would like to tell you how Trish and I, and you know, some of our family members, have come to believe that the new moon days and the new year days, how they should be determined, and what this means to us for the timing and the keeping of the holy days in this coming year. So let me start with just a word, and which I in the rest of the series that I often started with, and I want, please, you know what one of my favorite scriptures is? Colossians chapter 2 and verse 16. And can we go there? Some people tell me that this is out of context and it's that it was addressed to other people, but I really believe that this verse applies to you and me, and certainly in relation to this. Colossians chapter 2 and verse 16. Let no man therefore judge you in meat or in drink or in respect of a holy day or of the new moon or of the Sabbath days. So specifically with the holy day and the new moon there, don't let anybody judge you. But let's not forget the converse of that. Let us not unrighteously judge any of our brethren in respect of any of these things, even if they think otherwise. Okay, so with the subtopics that I'm going to go through today, talking about what I'm going to say, quote unquote, our timing of the new moon days and the new year's days, I know that some of our listeners, our brethren, might disagree. First of all, some of our listeners may not have come to the point at which they're convinced that the Jews, the Hebrew calendar, the Jewish calculated rabbinic calendar, we call it the CRC for short, and as it's followed by most of the major Church of God groups, we believe that that is unscriptural and wrong. However, again, many of our listeners may not have come to the point of believing that. And if so, that's fine. Because, you know, not so long ago, say, 3 years ago in our case, that Trish and I were of that same opinion. Some others of our listeners have come to the conviction that the CRC and the Church of God's, the churches of God's adoption of it is wrong, but may disagree with our timings and our methods, our calculation methods, or our determination methods, our methods of determining the new moon days, the new year's days, or maybe both. And again, if so, that too is fine. So if either of these or both of these happens to be the case with you, please, in the spirit of unity, in the spirit of Colossians 2:16, let's peacefully agree to disagree, and let's not fall out over these things. So, and I'm going to mention that at the end there, because by the end of it, you know, some of the brethren might not be too happy with the things that I say, okay? Okay. One of the things that came up in recent months in correspondence that we had is we know that there are some brethren who that say that anybody, any church member who questions or rejects the CRC, the Hebrew calendar, and the Church of God's adoption of it, that those people, or you know, many of you people and us people here, are somehow being anti-unity, or even worse, that we're causing division. And let me say that nothing could be further from the truth. It's true that God the Father and Jesus Christ want love and unity in their church, amongst their people. But here's a question. Do they want love and unity in their church at the expense of us closing our eyes to unscriptural additions to their holy word? Let me repeat that. Do they want love and unity in their church at the expense of us closing our eyes to unscriptural additions to their holy word? Please turn to Deuteronomy chapter 4, and I know that you're very, very familiar with. I'm going to give you three scriptures right here, and I know that you're very familiar with them. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 2. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 2. You shall not add, this is the Lord Yahweh speaking here, you shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish out from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord, the eternal Yahweh, your God, which I command you. Simple command there. You shall not add unto the word. Let's go over to chapter 12, please. Because it seems that the eternal was aware that his people would do this kind of thing. Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 32. Deuteronomy 12 and verse 32. What things soever I command you, observe to do it. You shall not add thereto, nor diminish from it. So there's a command for the Old Testament Israelites. There's two commands there that the modern day Jews should be adhering to. Of course, we should be adhering to that as well. And they would ignore Revelation chapter 22, but let's go over there anyway, because these are commands for you and me as well. And some people think that this command is just about the book of Revelation, what's written in the book of Revelation. But I feel that because God has placed it at the end of the Holy Bible, that it applies to the whole book. Revelation chapter 22 and verse 18. Revelation 22 verse 18. For I testify unto every man that he is the words of the prophecy of this book. If any man shall add unto these things, God shall add unto him the plagues that are written in this book. So, okay, let's talk a little bit more about the possibility of differences in our approach, or differences in opinions and methods on the holy day timings. Okay, some of our differences might separate some of us for some days in some years. Okay, sometimes the days for many of us line up like they did in 2014, and we were able to get together for the holy days and for the feast days, and that worked out fine. But in some years we might be separated because of these things, and hopefully only a few days in a few years. Hopefully the more we get into this, that eventually that God will bring us together in our understanding. He doesn't seem to be doing that right now for his own good reasons, and I don't know why, but that's the way it is. But if we have God's Holy Spirit dwelling within us, we should be able to work around our differences, and despite our differences, we should still be able to maintain a high level of unity and love for one another. So once again, in the spirit of Colossians chapter 2 and 16, whatever I say here, I don't want to offend anybody who happened to disagree with our timings. But in order to better explain what we call our timings, I need to explain why we didn't choose the other methods. And there's quite a few, there's actually not that many of them. So again, although there will be some repetition from the previous parts of the study, I don't want to repeat all of the fine detail of the different options today, just to discuss them briefly. Okay, so the first one is, how should the new moon days be determined? How should the new moon days be determined? And so we're going to look at the different options here. And we'll start off with the way that the Hebrew calendar keeps it, or does it, the calculated rabbinic calendar, the CRC. So, and again, I want to, for those of you out there who don't know the mainstream churches of God, adopted at a very early time, I guess through Herbert W. Armstrong, adopted the CRC, I believe originally in its entirety, and then they chipped away at it in a couple of areas over the years. Okay, but basically, as far as the timing of the calendar is concerned, they adopted it. Okay. Now, some listeners may not have looked into this for themselves, and I really do want to, if you haven't, I really want to urge you to do so. Again, some recent correspondence and conversations that we have received tells me that it's highly likely that your minister or church leader might possibly have advised you, either personally or maybe the whole church group, that you should trust his word, his education, and his long church experience. He might have said that, and that the CRC and the churches of God's adoption of it is okay, it's fine. They will probably tell you. And also that any discussion of it is divisive, unloving, and anti-unity. And again, I totally disagree with that. So may I respectfully urge any of you who are still maintaining adherence to the Church of God's use of the CRC not to believe me, not to believe my words, but rather do what the Bible says, improve all things, hold fast that which is good. That's 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 21. You don't have to turn there. Prove all things and hold fast that which is good and right. And also, and again you don't have to turn there, but Acts chapter 17 and verses 10 to 11. Emulate the Berean brethren. God said through the Apostle Paul that they were more noble. Actually through Luke it was. That they were more noble than other brethren, because they researched, they listened to the script, they listened to what the minister said, and they researched it for themselves. And I ask you to do the same thing, research it for yourself. I'll give you a quote. Many of you will remember a man, a Worldwide Church of God minister by the name of Herman Hay, Herman L. Hay. Remember Mr. Hay, Dr. Hay? And he wrote an Ambassador College course, put it together, and he used to teach it on the Hebrew calendar. And got a quote from the written course material, is what it says. It says, it is the responsibility of the church, capital C when he wrote that, it is the responsibility of the church, capital C, to announce the time of each festival to the congregations. And again, when he says the church here, I'm sure that he meant the upper levels of the Worldwide Church of God ministry at the time. Continuing the quote, detailed understanding of the Hebrew calendar is not even necessary for a lay church member, he says. And church there is lowercase c. So if you're a lay church member, you're down there. If you're a Worldwide Church of God minister, you're up there. Back in those days, I suppose. Continuing, he says, fortunately, I don't like that word because it's like good luck. Fortunately, the Hebrew calendar requires surprisingly little mathematical sophistication. A fifth grade background in arithmetic will suffice, he says. I'm going to read that again. Fortunately, the Hebrew calendar requires surprisingly little mathematical sophistication. A fifth grade background in arithmetic will suffice. Now, wow, you know, fifth grade. Is this true? What he said there, well, the answer is yes and no. Those last words that I quoted there from Dr. Hay about the simplicity of the calculation of the calendar are actually true, or at least should be true, if it's done right, and if we have, obviously, if we have all of the information. It should not be complicated, because God is not trying to trick us, he's not trying to confuse us, and he's not trying to make us fail. It's important to remember that as we go through this. But Dr. Hay's words are certainly not true when applied to the CRC, as his quote implies, that the way that they were keeping it right from the beginning, he's trying to say that it is simple to calculate. I can tell you with absolute confidence that the CRC is not simple. It's not fifth grade stuff. And I say that I can say it with absolute confidence, because I recently downloaded an article, a Hebrew calendar article from Wikipedia. Now Wikipedia, it was obviously written by an expert on the subject, there's no doubt about that. But the article was intended to be relatively simple. It was meant to give an overview and the very basics of the CRC. And most of its complex timings and postponement rules are not included in that article. But that so-called simple article, when I printed it out, even in a small font size of 12, size 12 font, was 30 pages of heavy, confusing reading. 30 pages plus another 17 pages of footnotes and links to other explanatory websites. So 47 pages, heavy stuff right there. So even with all of that verbiage, it leaves out a lot of the more important information. But once what we believe to be the proper methods are employed, the sacred calendar should become amazingly simple. So let me repeat that I respectfully urge any of you who are still adhering to the CRC to research it for yourself. But as many of us have found out who have researched it, once we have questioned the CRC and once we have rejected it and the veracity of it, then we're faced with another big problem. And it's a huge problem. And that is, what do we replace it with? What is the correct alternative? And this question is a big sticking point for many brethren. It's a big sticking point for many ministers as well, and it stops them from even getting started on researching into it. And because the answers to some of these questions may initially be somewhat unclear and may take some major effort to uncover, many shy away from it altogether. And I know, because I've been there and I've done that, and I think everybody in this room has. So, and again, I'm not putting a guilt trip on anyone who has decided to or is staying with the CRC for their own reasons. That's fine. I'm not trying to appear to be holier than thou, because I know that it takes time, it takes deep thought and study and effort. But I know also very well that shying away from it is not the answer. It's not the answer. Please turn over to James chapter 1. Again, no surprises here. There's no... this is a very... These are very well-known verses. James chapter 1 and verse 22. James 1, 22. But be you doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any be a hearer of the word, and not a doer, he is like unto a man beholding his natural face in a glass. For he beholds himself, and goes his way, and straightway forgets what manner of man he was. But whoso looks into the perfect law of liberty, the perfect law of liberty, and continues therein, he, being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. So ask a question now. Are the CRC and the postponements and the other rules, are they part of the perfect law of liberty, which we're told here we are to look into and to continue in? Or are they man-made traditions? Again, if you do a bit of research, you'll find out the answer pretty quickly. But God promises here that if we are willing to look into, to study into this perfect law of liberty and continue in it, if we study into it, if we're willing to act upon it and do it, that He'll bless us for doing so. Even if we don't have all the answers, even if, you know, one family might be doing it one way because that's the way they understand it to be, and another, He'll bless us because we're not just going along blindly, just following a human being. We're digging into God's Word, we're digging into history, we're digging into even into astronomy when we do this. But because we're doing that, God's going to bless us, even if we don't have all the answers. And I don't have all the answers. But we have to make decisions. We have to make decisions as we get close to the holy day season. Still in James, just let's pick up one verse over in chapter 4, please. James chapter 4 and verse 17. James chapter 4 and verse 17. Therefore, to him that knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. And this is nothing new to us, because this was this not one of the very first lessons that we all learned when we first came in contact with God's church years and years ago, for most of us? And we learnt about the Sabbath, and we learnt about unclean meats and all kinds of other things. We learned that change was necessary, repentance was necessary. We needed to change from the things that we'd previously thought were acceptable, and then we discovered we're wrong. Same with this now. Not that making changes is easy. It isn't easy, it's tough. You know, everybody, we all know that swimming upstream against the tide and the flow of the world is tough enough. But swimming upstream against the tide and flow of the church, swimming upstream against the tide and flow of the majority opinion of the greater church of God, is something else again. It's like another order of magnitude more difficult. Okay, we're going to get into this now. For this sermon, I'm going to concentrate mainly on the three main, or for this part of it, the new moon part of it, is I'm going to concentrate on the three main alternatives to the CRC's methods of doing it. If anyone wants more details on the CRC's version of it, you're welcome to contact me again. Not that I have all the answers. And same as everybody else, I have my own opinion too of what I believe, and that's what this is all about. But please keep in mind as well, these three alternatives that I'm going to give you now, they can be further divided as well into other differences of opinion. For example, whether the timing should be determined from Jerusalem, as we believe, or from one's own home location. Okay. So the alternate option number one then is the first visual sighting. Okay. Now I haven't researched any numbers on this, but from what I've read and from what I've heard, that this appears to be the most widely accepted alternate option amongst those who've come to reject the CRC. Now, some of the proponents of the first visual sighting will say that their method was the one that was given to Moses by God and was used by Moses and by others throughout the Bible. Okay. They also say that it's based on the light of the moon, whereas the conjunction methods are based on the dark of the moon. We're going to talk about that again in a couple of minutes. But again, with all due respect to the brethren there who believe that, I don't believe that the scriptures back up either of these views. In addition to my disagreements with these two claims, I have some other problems with the first visual sighting option as well. And again, I say this with all due respect for those who choose this method. First of all, what if it's foggy or cloudy on the sighting nights? That's the simple one. What if it's foggy or cloudy on multiple sighting nights or in multiple months? That can cause a problem. Also, we know from the scriptures, and you don't have to turn there, but I'll give you the scriptures right here. We quoted these before. Look up 1 Samuel chapter 20 and verse 5. Verse 18 and verse 24. I'll give you that again. 1 Samuel chapter 20, verses 5, 18, and 24. and also 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 22 and 23. What these verses show is that David, when he was a young man, Jonathan, a woman who was called a Shunammite woman, and even the Shunammite woman's unbelieving husband, all of them confidently knew in advance when the new moon day was due. They knew that when it was coming up. And there's no record of any of them, and there's no record of anyone else in the Bible saying, if the new moon comes, or if we sight the first crescent. You won't see that anywhere. Another problem is that there is no reliable, universally accepted official sighting authority. And that is a problem because it results in major differences of opinion whether or not the first crescent in any month was actually sighted. And I remember I looked it up, this was last March when I was really getting into that part of it, and there were some people who said, yeah, it had been sighted on a certain day, and then there was other people who said, no, it wasn't, and there was all kinds of arguments going backwards, and there was no universally accepted sighting authority for that. Another problem is that until the invention of the telegraph, 150 years ago or so, I can't remember how long ago, there was no reliable way of informing the Holy Day keepers who were far distant from Jerusalem. That was a problem if you did it that way. And finally, the final problem with it that I know of anyway, and this may be, it may seem like a picky one, but, and it may not be a really major one, but the span of time from the sighting of the new crescent to the full moon might only be 13 days, and from the full moon to the sighting of the next new crescent might be as much as 17 days. So you've got 13 days, 17 days. As well as being odd and out of balance, this throws the timing of the full moons off from falling on the first day of unleavened bread and the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles. And going to look at Psalm 81 in a minute, but that references into Psalm 81 and verse 3. Don't have to go there now. Okay, so that is the sighting of the first crescent. So, alternate option number 2 is the Roman calendar conjunction day. Now on this one, and I think this is a relatively minor one, I don't think there's many people who adhere to this one, but the proponents of this method, they take the calendar down off the wall. You know, you got a Roman calendar that shows the four moon phases, so they'd have the white circle and then the half moon and then the black circle, you know, whatever, and they'd find the black circle, which is the which indicates that the conjunction is on that particular day, sometime on that day, on a Roman calendar day, which could be any time, midnight to midnight, okay? And they choose that as the new moon day. And yeah, I had an email from a fella probably about it, not as much as a year ago, who said that, you know, all you got to do is look at your calendar and you know that that's a new moon day. So the main problems with that one is, if the conjunction, if the lunar conjunction occurs before sunset on that day in the calendar, but late in the day, then most of that day, if you think about it, would be under the old moon. So you're saying, this is a new moon day, but you know it wasn't conjunction until, say, into the evening, so most of that day was under the old moon, not the new one. if the conjunction occurs after sunset, then according to the scriptural counting of days, sunset to sunset, then the conjunction day would actually occur on the following day. Right? So, I'll give you an example of that. So if the Roman calendar shows the little black circle on a Monday, and if we look it up and we find that the conjunction that day actually took place at 7 o'clock in the evening, 7 p.m, but sunset on that day was 5:30 p.m, then according to God's timing of days, that conjunction falls on the third biblical day of the week and not the second one. Okay? So there's problems with that without going into any more detail on it. Okay, option three, and this is the one that we believe is correct, is the sunset after the conjunction. Right now, at this time, this is the option that we believe to be the most convincing, scripturally, historically, scientifically, and astronomically. However, it's the same with the way we believe the new year to begin as well. We are praying about it constantly, and I hope you are too. But if God reveals a different method is correct, then we will gladly be willing and ready to change. One of the great things about this method is it's very simple. And just the simple description of it is this. The new moon day begins at the first sunset following the time of the lunar conjunction, timed from Jerusalem, but of course we start our new moon day at our sunset locally. Okay, so okay, we'll get into that later on. We'll go into the detail of that. The sunset times are easy to find. The conjunction times are easy to find. Website. It's called www.sunrisesunset.com, but there's lots of other websites that you can go to that give basically the same information. Sometimes they might be a couple of minutes different, but generally they're pretty much the same. Now, there are brethren who have problems with this, and some of the detractors of this method claim, first of all, that the ancients did not have access to such accurate tabular data as we have. Now, I actually picked up a website article from the Karaite brethren, and the Karaite Corner website, on the vernal equinox and the Tekufar, and the author states, here's what he says. He says, it is doubtful whether the ancient Israelites even knew of the equinox, and they certainly had no way of calculating when it would be. Okay, now let me repeat that again. It is doubtful whether the ancient Israelites even knew of the equinox, and they certainly had no way of calculating when it would be. And I want to strongly, vociferously beg to differ on this, and here's why. There's a photograph on the table there, and if Joe, if you want to pass that around, and I put it on the website, on the homepage of the website, and there's a picture of a place that Trish and I visited in Ireland just a couple of months ago after the feast. This place is called Bruna Boyne, and it's spread over a couple of square mile area, and it is a truly astonishing prehistoric site, and it contains three huge, complex, brilliantly designed, brilliantly engineered, brilliantly constructed, and brilliantly decorated buildings that are 5,000 years old. 5,000 years old. Now, what's astonishing about them is that one building, the one we actually had access to going into, is called, in English, it's called New Grange. It lines up the whole building, and it's absolutely a huge building, lines up perfectly with the rising sun on the winter solstice. Okay, the second building is called Knowth, K-N-O-W-T-H, and it perfectly lines up with the sun on the vernal equinox. Now the third one hasn't been fully unearthed yet, but I'm sure that they're going to find something special on that once they've got it dug out. Now I assume that the people who built this, these 5,000 year old Irishmen, were probably non-Israelitish. I could be wrong, but as far as I know. Still, if this ancient people had the ability to compile such finely accurate astronomical data in order to engineer and build these huge buildings to line up so perfectly with the sun, I need half an hour to explain to you the way they did it. But when you, it's not like you're working with a bit of plastic or paper to line these things up. These guys were using absolutely huge blocks of stone to do this. Absolutely huge. Okay. If they had the ability to do that so perfectly, to line up those buildings with the sun's major annual events of solstice and equinox, I have no doubt at all that the Israelites could do so as well. And more particularly with God's special guidance, perhaps similar to the talent that he imbued into Bezalel and Aholiab in the building of his tent tabernacle. So what I'm saying is, I believe that God didn't leave them in the dark, if you'll excuse the pun, but that he explained these things to them. He gave them the information as part of the oracles of God, yes, and that they had the ability. I'm not saying that they went and built these kind of buildings, but I'm saying they knew how to calculate these things. They had the mathematics to be able to do it. They had the astronomic information that they needed to do it. Okay, so that was the first claim against the way we do it. Some other detractors of this method say that the conjunction options are based on the dark of the moon. The dark of the moon. And the dark moon is somehow a bad thing. Okay? Now, I totally agree. We totally agree that spiritual darkness certainly is a bad thing. But all physical darkness, and that's what we're talking about here, is not necessarily bad or evil. We're talking about the conjunction when for a few seconds the moon is dark. Okay. God created the laws of physical darkness just as much as he created those for physical light. Please turn to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 4. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. God did that. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. God did that. And the evening and the morning were the first day. Jump down to verse 17, please. Verse 17. And God set them, talking about the sun and the moon, in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. not just the light, but the darkness, the physical darkness as well. God did not create evil. And if God wanted to have light, or if he wanted the world to have light 24/7, he would have made it that way. But he didn't. So again, just as much as he created daytime and light for man's benefit, so also he made nighttime and darkness for man's benefit. Again, it's true. The scriptures that tell us that spiritual darkness is a bad thing. Again, you don't have to turn there, but I'll just quote Romans chapter 13, verses 11 to 13, and 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 6 to 8. These scriptures tell us that spiritual darkness is bad, but none of them allude to the physical dark of the moon. So if we're going to be fair and logical, when we look into those scriptures and we see those scriptures, we say that spiritual nighttime and spiritual sleep are condemned by God along with spiritual darkness. So we ask the question then, do the brethren who claim that the physical dark moon is bad or evil also claim that nighttime and sleep are bad or evil? Doesn't make sense really, does it? So, also, it's important to remember that at the time of the lunar conjunction, the moon is only totally dark for a very short time, perhaps only seconds. And if you want to look it up, there's a man, a French photographer by the name of Thierry Legault, T-H-I-E-R-R-Y, Legault, L-E-G-A-U-L-T. You can look him up on the internet. He took some incredible high-resolution photographs of the moon at conjunction. And, like, right after the time of conjunction, the very split second of it, sure enough, there's the brand new crescent on the right hand side of it. It's kind of upper right anyway. It's worth looking at that because they're in amazing photos. Okay, they're the detractions. They're the what people criticize. So, and I don't want to hide those things. They're things that people say is wrong with the conjunction methods. On the positive side, in favor of what we call our method, and let me just say that when we said that it was our method, I didn't just sit down and say, well, I think this is the best one, something. I didn't just copy it from somebody else. A group of us actually sat down and we thrashed it out between ourselves. What we call our method happens to agree with Frank Nelty's methods, okay? His name's Frank Nelty, N-E-L-T-E, and he has a very good website that you can go into, but we did not go into his website first and say, we didn't just copy everything off him. We sat down and we said, what is logical, what is scriptural, what is astronomically true? And then we went to him. The good thing about Frank Nelty, by the way, is amongst all of the men that I know who've looked into this, and women too, he is the one who has been doing it for the longest. And not that really matters, but he's got so much experience on it. We met him back in 1997, I think it was, and he was well up in it back then. Okay, that was just an aside. Okay, again, in favor of this method then, using this method, the full moons for the first day of unleavened bread and the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles will fall on the 15th of the first month and the 15th of the seventh month, as they logically should fall. And this lineup of, with the full moons might fit in with Psalm 81 and verse 3. I want to turn over there. We'll just mention it, touch on it here. And it's a little bit controversial, I would say. Psalm 81 and verse 3. And we covered it quite extensively in part 4, but let's again, the King James Version reads as follows. Psalm 81 verse 3. Blow up the trumpet in the new moon, in the time appointed, in the time appointed on our solemn feast day. But a lot of modern translations, including the New King James Version, I'll read you the New King James Version, blow the trumpet at the time of the new moon, at the full moon, on our solemn feast day. Okay, so at the full moon. The Hebrew word for, single word for in the time appointed in the King James Version and at the full moon in the New King James Version is kesei, that's K-E-H-S-E-H, and that's Strong's 3677. The word kesei was derived from the root verb kasa, K-A-C-A-H, don't know whether I'm pronouncing it right, that's Strong's 3680. And that's translated in some scriptures as cover, hide, conceal, covering, overwhelmed, spread over, clad, closed, and clothed. So some translations render it as the covered moon. And that's kind of hard to for most of us to get our heads around. It's difficult to use this verse to dogmatically to prove the point either side, because these translations of kasa could refer to the moon being clothed or covered with light, which would mean the full moon, or darkness, which would mean the new moon. But still, Strong, who did the concordance there, does state that the full moon definitely is a valid translation of Kesei. Okay, so that's how the new moon should be determined. Okay, different ideas of it, and I've given you the way we look at it. Now, how should the new year be determined? And again, I don't want to go into the various options too deeply, because we've done that in earlier parts of the series, but we'll skim over them and we'll give them a brief mention. Let's go to the CRC and see how they do it, and how the Churches of God, the Churches of God really don't do it. I would say that the majority of the Churches of God do not actually go into the detail and find out. They don't do what the Jews do. They go to the Jews and find out the timing from them, and they slot it in. Okay, so this is the method that's used by the Jews and emulated by the mainstream Church of God groups. Okay, and that's counting backwards 177 days from Tishri 1. The first thing they do is they determine when the first day of the seventh month is, or maybe, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. And then they feel that they know when Tishri 1 is, and then they count backwards 177 days from there. So there's at least a couple of problems with this method. But in my mind, the main problem with it is that it totally disobeys God's clear command in Exodus chapter 12. Let's go and take a look at that. Exodus chapter 12. Verse 1. By the way, when I say Jews, I'm not anti-Semitic. I love the Jews, and they're our brothers and sisters, and I'm talking about the Jews generally, but I know that there are different sects of the Jews who are probably more accurate, more willing to do it the way that God wants it done than others. That's probably the best way I can say it. So I have nothing against the Jews per se. Okay, Exodus chapter 12 and verse 1. And the Eternal Yahweh spoke unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, This month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. This month. And we can be sure which month that the Lord was referring to then. Just by, and again, I'm not going to do so now, but the following verses in Exodus chapter 12 that contain the instructions for the timing of the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and also from the Abib verses, the verses that mention Abib, there's four of them in Exodus and Deuteronomy, and also from the Holy Day, and especially the wave sheaf offering instructions in Leviticus chapter 23, we know what that first month was. We know that it was in the spring. So in effect, the Jews, the rabbinic Jews, and the Church of God followers begin their year in the autumn. And they count back 177 days to determine their New Year's Day. Second problem with this way of doing it, and I don't have time to go into the detail of it, is that their timing, the Jews' timing of the first day of the seventh month, is sometimes in error. They don't always get it right. And the third problem with it is that the difference between the conjunctions of the first month and the seventh month is not always 177 days. Sometimes it's 176 days, and sometimes it's 178 days. So if we start our year from the wrong day, then the whole calendar is off. Okay, so that's the CRC version of it. Option number two is with regards to the barley. The barley being almost ripe. Now the basis of this option is, first of all, in the Old Testament there was a requirement for the availability of the first fruits of some grain crop to be ready for the reaping. So it was the first fruits of that crop had to be ready for the reaping of the wave sheaf offering on the day after the Sabbath. It was a Sunday. On the day after the Sabbath that fell within the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And I don't have to turn there, but that's Leviticus chapter 23, verses 9 to 14. And secondly, the perceived meaning of the Hebrew word Abib in Strong's number 24, the perceived meaning of the Hebrew word Abib, and that word is derived from the root word meaning to be tender, and it's rendered six times untranslated as Abib. Once it is translated as in the ear, and once it is translated as green ears of corn. The word for barley is actually not mentioned in there at all. The word for barley is actually not mentioned in Leviticus 23 at all. Now, again, I'm not knocking this, but although it may be a good secondary indication of when the new year, new moon should be, using it on its own can be very hit and miss, especially because the growing seasons in Israel can be so unpredictable. And I read right through this letter. I got a letter. I didn't get it. It was written to one of the brethren in somewhere in BC. I think somebody somewhere in Abbotsford, I think. And this was a letter that actually confirmed the unpredictability of the growing seasons in Israel. And the man's name who wrote the letter was Mr. N. Bardroma. And he was the director of the field crops department in the government, Israeli government's Ministry of Agriculture. And this is what he wrote. He said that normally the barley harvest starts around the end of April to the beginning of May. Now this guy is an expert on field crops. The barley harvest starts around the end of April to the beginning of May. But in that particular year that he wrote this letter, is what he said. He said, "We've had an extremely cold and wet winter, and therefore there was a great delay in the ripening of the wheat and the barley." Interesting, in the wheat and the barley, that he puts them together around the same time. He says, "This year, the first wheat," in other words, the first fruit of the wheat and the barley, "this year the first wheat and barley have been harvested not before the middle of May in the Jordan Valley." The middle of May. So we ask a question. Would a mid-May harvest of first fruits and a wave sheaf offering then have been acceptable? Okay, just to finish off this quote from Mr. Bardroma, he also points out, in the Talmud, it is mentioned that there were years when the barley was not yet ripe at Passover. So then we ask another question, could the Jews' timings have been off in those particular years? Now the Talmud is not necessarily referring to Bible times, but, you know, to more likely to later times. We ask another question, how would a mid-May harvest of the first fruits affect the timing of the wave sheaf offering and the Feast of Unleavened Bread and the New Year's Day? It would push them and all the subsequent holy days back really late. Would that be okay? But in God's word, in the scriptures, God commands nothing regarding the timing of his calendar and holy days by the state of the barley crop. And the barley, again, is not even mentioned in Leviticus chapter 23. So what did he command his people to use for the determination of the times and the seasons? Let's go back to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1. In verse 14, again the question is, what did God command us to use for the determination of the times and the seasons? Genesis chapter 1 verse 14, "And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years." So he commanded this to be done by the actions of the sun and the moon and the stars. Now we've already seen that the new moon indicates the beginning of each month. So another question, which light in the firmament of heaven commands the beginning of each year? What else but the sun? The sun. How? When? At the winter solstice, as the heathen believed, and still do, apparently? Of course not. The wave sheaf offering scriptures and other scriptures clearly show us that God's new year begins in the fruitful springtime of the year, not in the dead of winter. So again, we know that the wave sheaf offering is in the spring. We know that the Passover season is in the springtime. What major solar event announces the arrival of spring? What else but the vernal equinox? And people will tell you that the vernal equinox is not in the Bible, it's not mentioned or whatever. But God says that we use the heavenly bodies and the movement of them to determine the year's beginning. So then, what possibilities do we have for the timing of God's new year by the vernal equinox? Well, there's at least three. Okay, so let's look at them. And this then is option number three. And this is the closest new moon to the vernal equinox. The closest new moon to the vernal equinox. So the supporters of this option believe that the closest new moon to the vernal equinox is the new year, new moon. And whether it falls, whether that new moon falls before or after the equinox. Now the main problem that I see with this one is that if the closest new moon to the equinox falls before the equinox, then all the time from that new moon to the equinox is not in the fertile season of spring, but it's still in the relatively dead season of winter. And the further the closest new moon is before the equinox, the more of that time is still in the winter. And that can be a maximum of almost 15 days, actually, that would still be in the winter. And by the way, some people say that, you know, it's kind of that the equinox, it's, you know, that we have good weather before the equinox and we have nice days before the equinox. That's true, it is. But definitely, you know, in Israel as well as here in Canada as well, the equinox makes the big difference, that the temperatures, both here and in Israel, increase markedly right after the vernal equinox, and the rainfall decreases as well. Maybe not so much here in BC, which is what we call the wet coast of Canada. But, you know, if you look, all you got to do is look, again, take a look in the internet and have a look at the climatic conditions in Israel, and you'll see that right after March the 20th, you'll see that the temperatures increase right away, and that the rainfall decreases, and that makes a lot of sense. Okay, option number four, just a quick one here. This is counting backwards from the Passover that follows the vernal equinox. And the supporters of this option feel that it's not the first day of the month, of the first month, that should follow the vernal equinox, but the 14th day of the month, the Passover, that has to follow the vernal equinox. So that, without going into the detail of it, that option is sometimes incorporated with options number 1 and 3 that we looked at. But still, it can leave 13 days of the first month in winter, okay? And again, it has no scriptural support, so there's problems with that one. Option number 5, and this is the one that we believe to be the correct one, and this is that the next new moon after the vernal equinox is the new year, new moon, okay? And just like our, you know, quote unquote, and it's not ours, it's the one that we believe to be correct. Like our new moon calculation, the timing of our new year calculation is very simple. And the full description is simply this, that it's the first sunset following the first lunar conjunction following the vernal equinox. Okay, say that again. The first sunset following the first lunar conjunction following the vernal equinox. So what do you got to do? And again, these dates are easy to find, especially now on the internet. You know, we don't have to build huge Brüner Boyne buildings to do it. But so we find out when the vernal equinox is. And say, okay, when is the first lunar conjunction after the vernal equinox? Easy, we can find that. And then, when is the first sunset following that first lunar conjunction? Right? Okay, Warren has a diagram. Did I bring the diagrams in? I thought I did. doesn't matter. We'll get them later on, and I'll post them on the internet as well that show these things. Warren put them together, and they show very clearly how this works. Okay, now again, this is counted from Jerusalem. Okay, so you look up the date, you know, you look up the dates and the times for Jerusalem, and then we say, okay, so that is the day, but obviously we have to keep the whole day in our own location, and we're what, here in on the west coast, we're 10 hours, we're 10 hours different from Jerusalem. Yeah, so we say, okay, that is the new year, new moon day in Jerusalem. We're keeping that on the same day, okay? Yeah, okay, we're 10 hours behind, but you know, we use their timing to say this is the day, and then we calculate it from sunset to sunset locally. Okay, hope that's clear. When we use this option, it prevents the New Year's Day from ever occurring in the winter. It prevents the New Year's Day from ever occurring prior to the vernal equinox. So in Old Testament times, when they were keeping the wave sheaf offering, this method would have produced the appropriate weather conditions for the correct ripeness of the grain in time for the wave sheaf offering, certainly more reliably than the other options that gave, you know, that would give the New Year's Day before the equinox, still in the winter. Also, the use of this option, and again, I haven't mentioned 19-year time cycles, and I haven't mentioned 13th months into calorie months, and I don't want to get into it in too much detail, but this option, this method of doing it, avoids the necessity for artificially advanced predeterminations of 19-year time cycles. It's really not necessary. It's true that in some years, and this is one of them, 2014-2015, that a 13th intercalary month will be necessary in order to adjust the lunar year with the solar year. But when you use this method, they fall in line naturally and automatically, and there's no need for bogus, artificial, rule-laden calculations to work that out. Not necessary. Okay, so what does this mean now? Here we are in 2015. What does this mean for the holy days this year? So what I want to do is compare, again, our new moon day and a new year methods with the usual CRC and Church of God timings. Let's go for the CRC and Church of God timings first of all. So if we look at the, you can pick one up there, a little card. If we look at the 2015 Holy Day calendar for most of the Church of God groups, and I've got a bunch of them in the back room there, which again are based on the Jews' postponement-based CRC, we'll notice that their New Year's Day, their first day of the sacred year, is shown as March 20th, and 21st, okay, I'm giving you sunset to sunset, so March 20/21, which gives a Passover date then of April 2/3, so would normally then most of those people would be keeping the Passover on the evening of April 2nd, and the daylight portion of the Passover day would be on the 3rd. Okay, but let's take a look at Jerusalem at that time. Here we are in Jerusalem. The vernal equinox will occur in Jerusalem on March the 21st at 12:45 a.m., 12:45 in the morning. Some of the tables are a little bit different on that. But the closest lunar conjunction to that vernal equinox will occur on March the 20th at 11:37 a.m. That is more than 13 hours before the vernal equinox, and thus that lunar conjunction is still in the winter season. It's not in the spring. Also, the sunset beginning that new moon day will be March the 20th at 5:50 p.m. That's still 7 hours before the vernal equinox and before the beginning of spring, and thus still in the winter season. Some people might listen to what I'm saying there and they might say, you're nitpicking, you know, it's only 13 hours or it's only 7 hours. But God is precise, and God's calendar, I believe, is precise. We look at the Sabbath day, if we want to say that that's nitpicking, we can look at the Sabbath day and say, well, you know, it's really not convenient in the winter time for me to finish work at 4:20. You know, you'll understand if I work till 5:20. You know, all right. You know, or will God be happy if this evening that we said, I'm going to go out shopping at 3:30, you know. The time, there's no argument with God's timing, whether it be with the Sabbath, with the holy days, and with his calendar. We're not nitpicking. But once we believe on a rule, then we have to go for it, you know. Until, you know, if God comes and changes our mind on it, we've got to be strict on that rule. Okay, so that's the way the CRC are doing it. So rather than what I'm saying then, is what we believe with regards to the correct timing then. Rather than ushering in the New Year's Day of 2015-2016 sacred year, the March 20th new moon actually ushers in the 13th intercalary month of the 2014-2015 sacred year. So here's what we believe to be the correct timing of the New Year's Day for the 2015-2016 sacred year, again timed at Jerusalem. Again, vernal equinox, March 21st at 12:45 a.m. Again, some tables show that is a little bit different. The next lunar conjunction after the vernal equinox timed in Jerusalem is April the 18th at 9:58 p.m. And the sunset beginning the next new moon day is April the 19th at 7:10 p.m. So the way we believe it to be, the new year new moon day, sunset to sunset, is April 19/20. The Passover sunset to sunset is May 2nd and 3rd. First day of unleavened bread is May the 3rd and the 4th. The last day of unleavened bread, and also, by the way, the wave sheaf offering day, is May the 9th/10th. Pentecost is June the 27th and 28th. Feast of Trumpets is October the 13th and 14th. And again, I'm not saying that we keep them on 2 days. I'm saying that we, you know, I'm talking about sunset to sunset. The Day of Atonement is October the 22nd and 23rd. Feast of Tabernacles is October the 27th and 28th. And the last great day is November the 3rd and 4th. Now those holy day dates are basically a whole month after the CRC and Church of God dates. Okay. So in conclusion, I know that's a lot of information to process, Trisha's going to be good enough to transcribe it for me, and you know, within a couple of days we'll have it up. within a couple of days we'll have it up on the internet. So, okay. The thing is now, I want to repeat now before I finish my two pleas to everyone. If you haven't looked into this, please take the time to do so. And secondly, again in the spirit of Colossians chapter 2 and verse 16 and its converse, please let's not fall out over any of this. If you choose to stay with the CRC methods and timing, go ahead. You know, we're not going to judge you, and we're your brothers and sisters. If you have rejected the CRC methods, but if you've chosen any of the other new moon methods or new year determination methods than the ones we've chosen, and if you disagree with our stance on any of these points, please, again, we are and we still want to be your spiritual brothers and sisters. Do you have physical brothers and sisters with whom you don't agree on everything? I do. And don't you still love them? I do. I love my sister. Brethren, we have God's Holy Spirit dwelling in us. Shouldn't we be able to do the same? Shouldn't we be able to do even better?